This is Sam Darmacena, and you're listening to CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative.
As a politician, as a political human being, stories have always been foundational to how I relate to policy and how I relate to politics and how I frame organizing. Even when I was, an activist and more in those organizing spaces than as a political person now. But our stories are powerful, right? Our lived experiences and the way we narrate those lived experiences frame us, right? They're foundational to our whole identity and the way that we interact with and navigate the world. And it's a tool I use every day in the legislature. When I go and talk to student groups and they'll say things like, oh, isn't it scary when, you have to stand up and give an hour long speech in the House and how do you prepare for that? Because people are truly terrified of public speaking, right? It's a big fear that a lot of people have. But I've always approached that work in the legislature as just narrative. It's storytelling. It's me standing up and talking about the stories that my constituents have come and shared with me about, their issues navigating housing and poverty and precarity and racism and, their climate anxiety.
That's MPP Suze Morrison of Toronto Centre, where Ryerson is located. In this year in review segment, we reflect on some accomplishments and challenges of 2020, her Stories for Change podcast that launched this year, and the fact that she's a major motorsports enthusiast. And as a quick disclaimer, this interview was recorded in early December, so some issues we discuss, like the evictions moratorium, may have changed since then. To start off, I asked MPP Morrison about the kinds of issues that constituents typically connect with her around. She says there's lots of issues to discuss, and constituents will also share their stories around how any government decision is impacting their lives.
And helping tenants generally organize into tenants association is something we're really passionate about in our office. But we also deal with folks that are, the most vulnerable in our community that are falling through the cracks in terms of provincial services. So it's folks with, ODSP, so that's the Ontario Disability Support Program, Ontario Works. Those folks that are having issues with their cases, maybe having trouble getting a hold of their worker or processing a particularly complicated thing to do with their case, OSAP issues, things to do with Service Ontario, and then we do some strange stuff that people don't know about, like MPP offices are offer free service as commissioners of oaths. So if you need an affidavit signed, you can go to your MPP's office, and we're all commissioners of oaths by the nature of our office, and our staff can do that work for us as well.
And reflecting on some of the year's accomplishments, MPP Morrison says that the unanimous passing of her motion calling for an evictions moratorium until we're in the post-pandemic recovery period is definitely top of mind right now.
The next step after the motion is passed is for the Premier to actually sign the emergency order to bring it into effect. So the motion passed with unanimous consent, but we need the Premier to take the step to actually sign the order to make it be so. So we're continuing to do that work to protect tenants in the province. But, the opportunity for individual members to bring up their own bills and motions is an opportunity that we only get as an individual member about once a year. I mean, appreciating there's 124 members in the legislature. So it's a pretty big deal when we can get something passed. And I think it means a lot to the local community that we represent as well.
Looking back at the year more broadly, she says that 2020 is entirely set by the tone of COVID-19. And the pandemic also impacts the work of opposition members.
I think the tone changed in the legislature in the early months, in terms of the types of proposals we were putting forward to the government and calling on them to adopt. Things like, a rent subsidy, supports for small businesses. We really tried to set the bar high in terms of what we were going to expect from the government this year. And as they continued to fail to deliver, on any of these really amazing proposals, we were, laying out at their feet on a silver platter saying, please take our ideas, steal them, implement them. Our ideas don't have to be bad just because they're coming from opposition. But then it got to be a really frustrating year as they continued to walk away from the table and ignore the proposals for real meaningful relief that we were putting out there.
We also reflect on the many challenges that 2020 brought. With the COVID-19 vaccine entering the country now, and one of the first vaccines being administered to a PSW in MPP Morrison's own writing, she says that the plan overall for vaccines is an area of concern.
As much as that fills me with hope that the end is in sight, because it has been such a hard year for so many people, I'm terrified about what the plan to actually get this vaccine out to the public looks like. What is the plan? What's the distribution plan? What does reopening look like when we start to get into, you know, maybe 10%, 20%, 30% of the public is vaccinated? You know, when can we start lifting restrictions? What sort of critical mass do we need to be at to restrict those, to lift those restrictions? People have had a really hard year and we have a lot of questions. And there is no plan. There is no plan. And so that is extremely terrifying. And with the legislature now not in session until February, we don't have the face-to-face opportunity to ask those critical questions of the premier through things like question period now until February when the House resumes.
The state of long-term care and its response to the pandemic was another challenge on MPP Morrison's list.
I mean, long-term care has been slowly and systematically eroded at and privatized and underfunded for going on 2 decades now. Honestly, what did anyone think was going to happen? When Mike Harris and under Dalton McGuinty and Kathleen Wynne under the Liberals, when they allowed the long-term care sector to become privatized and allowed it to stay privatized, for, like I said, going back 2 years or 2 decades, the second you build profit margins into a healthcare service, you start to make decisions about maximizing profit, not maximizing quality of care. It's how cheap and how efficiently can you warehouse our elders, not how do we provide a high quality public service to our seniors, our elders, people that, have given their lives to building up our communities, that at this phase of their life deserve the highest levels of respect and the highest degree of care.
She adds that we have to keep working towards a better long-term care system, even though we have our long-awaited vaccine.
I mean, we can't, pat ourselves on the back once the vaccine is here, put the trauma of this year behind us. We can't unsee and we can't forget, what this crisis revealed to us. We need to make sure we've learned from the mistakes of this year and chart a new path forward because we can't continue to run a long-term care sector on the backs of predominantly racialized women, PSWs and nurses who are making minimum wage, and having to work 3 and 4 part-time jobs because no one will hire them full-time because no one wants to give them benefits and job security. And that was the single biggest reason why the outbreaks were so bad in the early days from our long-term care homes. It's because the system created profit on the backs of the workers who they wouldn't hire full-time. So to make a living wage as a PSW, the average PSW has, 3 and 4 part-time gigs at all these different homes, and they bounce from home to home to home. Well, so as soon as there was an infection at one, suddenly there was an outbreak at all of them. And it was transferring through the workers who were so marginalized and precarious to make way for the profit of the system, for those shareholders, that thousands of our elders died as a result, and healthcare workers as well. Healthcare workers put their lives on the line to keep our system going for the past year, making $14 an hour to do it. It's shameful.
I also chat with MPP Morrison about connecting with constituents in a year where social gatherings weren't possible. She jokes that her opinion might be a little clouded since she was supporting NDP candidate Brian Chang during the Toronto Centre federal by-elections a few months ago.
We had to write a whole new rule book for how to do civic engagement and democracy in a pandemic. And that was an experience, and it was, we couldn't knock on doors. It wasn't safe to do that. We couldn't put our volunteers in positions that, you know, were unsafe or put them at risk. You know, we had to spend a lot of time on the phone. But then that meant, you know, were we meeting and reaching out to the same breadth of voters that you can at the door? No, you're only reaching the people you have phone numbers for, or you're only reaching the people that have phones. You know, I think, without being able to do that in-person interaction piece, I think it excluded a lot of folks who, you know, may have precarious access to phone lines or pay-as-you-go phones or constantly changing numbers or constantly changing addresses, you know, or people you didn't have data for. So it changed how the election looked and felt.
She adds that the campaign did a fantastic job in terms of safety, and in the end, she was surprised at how engaged voters were, despite everything else that was going on in our lives this fall. And while some methods of engagement are unavailable right now, MPP Morrison has been finding new ways to connect with constituents, like her Stories for Change podcast. She says that while the project is well thought out and intentional now, it actually was born out of a Zoom technical difficulty. She was running a tenant town hall earlier this year, and the video file was corrupted. So that's where the idea of launching a podcast came from.
So it was actually this like technological glitch that happened early in the pandemic. And we were like, yeah, why are we not doing a podcast? but I'll be completely honest, that's how it came about. And so we were able to repurpose audio from this digital town hall we had done as our first podcast episode. And what's been really interesting is it's allowed us to repurpose a lot of the work that we're doing in a different format to engage a new and different audience in a way that, you know, is, you know, better and easier for them. You know, do people necessarily want to sit and watch the same sort of Zoom frame digital town hall, you know, over and over and over again? No, but, you know, do people want to put their podcasts on when they're in the car commuting to work or, you know, on the subway or, you know, working out? Yeah, they do. And so it's given us, you know, a second space to take some of the same conversations we're having in other places and meet people where they're at in terms of how they want to consume that information.
There are about 15 episodes of Stories for Change now. Some are recordings of digital town halls, and MPP Morrison is finding even more ways to bring political conversations to her constituents.
You know, we've even, you know, pulled audio straight from debate. In the House, where if we've had a really engaging, strong debate in the legislature, you know, I'll do a bit of an introduction to kind of introduce people to, you know, kind of cutting into the debate so it's not so jarring and they know what's going on. And then, you know, pull that audio file from the Hansard and let people actually listen to what's going on in the House firsthand in an exciting way. So, yeah, it's been really fun. We've had a good time with it, and my staff love putting it together.
Not many politicians host a podcast yet. But MPP Morrison says it actually makes a lot of sense because storytelling is such a central part of her political life.
You know, as a legislator, it's not necessarily, you know, my job to understand the legalese of how we write our own laws. You know, we work with legal counsel to make sure that the laws that we're writing make sense legally. And because we're not all lawyers and we shouldn't be, but it's our job to impart into that conversation around how we write laws, what the people in our community are saying, and then to explain those laws back to them in a lay way that they're going to understand. And the best way to do that is through stories and through narrative. You know, and the best way to bring people together to organize around a cause is through story and through narrative, because it's emotional and it's a way to link people together. You know, when I'm vulnerable and I tell you a very true thing, a very true experience that happened to me, in a way that creates an emotional connection between us, you know, we are now bonded together in an emotional way that says, I care about what happened to you and I want to change the world so it doesn't happen to someone else. And now you're not just a person with a problem, now you're a movement. And so that was always our goal going into the podcast, because it was always about stories, and not necessarily my stories, but the stories from the community.
To connect with MPP Suze Morrison and maybe catch up on her Stories for Change podcast, visit suzemorrison.ca. And in the spirit of the holidays, I asked MPP Morrison what she does to relax and recharge. Turns out she's actually more of a thrill seeker, and in her downtime, she's a motorsports enthusiast.
So I do a couple things. In the summer months, I actually compete. I have a Honda Civic that I compete in autocross, which is like a very grassroots form of motorsports. So I do that in the summertime. It's a really like fun, immersive, like physically and mentally engaging thing. That's also like it's almost like a reboot to all of the fun chemicals in your brain, like all your happy chemicals, like your adrenaline and your serotonin. And it's go racing for a day, go to a track day, and all those happy chemicals get fired up in your brain. So that's really great. And then in the off season, like I get really into watching F1, and I do sim racing. Like I've got like computer racing with like a wheel and pedal setup at home. So I am a full automotive nerd, and that's what I throw myself into when I'm super stressed out and need to relax.
This is Sam Darmacena, and you've been listening to CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative, a project by the Community Radio Fund of Canada.